Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9, coming to you from the beautiful Kalahari Resort here in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin. That's right, Wisconsin Dells, right?
Yes.
For that conference, not this conference. And that's the joke you have to do at least once. Have you done it already?
Yes. Recently, I've done it a couple hundred times because my company sponsored for the first time this year.
Fantastic. So we're here, Tony Gamol. We had you on last year, bud.
Yes. I was here last year.
Fantastic. So tell us about that conference. How do you like it?
That conference is awesome. Sunday afternoon, somebody described it as a big family reunion, and I'm stealing that.
I love it. Big family reunion. So you gave talks last year. What did you talk about last year? We had a little combo, too.
Yeah, we talked about the audio API in JavaScript.
Oh, that's right. And all this, the awesome things that I remember that. And I was pretty surprised. I remember thinking, I should look at that. Shame on me. So
no worries.
This year, what are you talking about?
This year, we're talking about moving from Angular 1 to Angular 2 and kind of the differences that are there, how to get started, and what comes with that decision.
And so now over the campfire, because it'll be more soothing for those that do Angular 1, is it a big leap?
If you're keeping current with Angular 1, so using modern techniques, maybe throwing in some ES6 in there or ES2015, it's not so bad. There's some syntax changes, but it's really not that bad. A lot of the ceremony was removed and simplified.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the things that you need to be aware of if you're thinking, I'm moving from Angular 1 to Angular 2. What are some things that are some big gotchas that you know about?
Some of the big gotchas. So if you're writing like Angular 1, where you have a giant controller and a giant view that has like 1,000 lines in it, you're probably not going to have a really easy migration.
I see.
What else is there? Some of the other things to look out for is Angular 2 is all written in TypeScript. Right now, the documentation assumes you are using TypeScript. As time goes on, it'll allow you not, or it'll be more documented for you not to. But right now, all the blogs, all the docs are in TypeScript. And then on top of that, the other kind of interesting thing is they brought in reactive extensions and fully supported that.
Oh, interesting. So for those that don't know what reactive extension is, what are those?
So you have callbacks and you have promises. Reactive extensions are just another way to do async programming. If you've done streams in Node, it's sort of like that, where you just have an event, a stream of data, and your methods enact on that stream in flight, and then eventually an event gets fired with that final data piece, and you do whatever you need to do with it.
Interesting. I've heard that, for example, like reactive extensions is a push versus our traditional pull model, where we do like a for all of them, and then we do it. Instead, there's a method that just gives us the thing as it happens.
Yep. So I actually have a
slide
on that, or some code on that. So if you think about doing your, like an autocomplete, like Netflix or Google, where you start typing in and it autocompletes. If you had to do that with Vanilla.js, it's really difficult to kind of do the timeouts and then control which async operation is the current async operation.
Yes, and of course.
So in reactive extensions, my little code thing here is, it's, what is that, 7 lines of code?
Yeah.
If we take out the async call and the DOM manipulation. So what it's really doing is you subscribe to event stream, in this case key up. The map function takes the event and just maps out the value. The filter function says if the value isn't longer than 2 characters, then we'll drop it. Debounce says if it hasn't been 750 milliseconds, we'll drop it. So that way we can wait for there to be a pause. Distinct until change says, hey, this hasn't changed yet, because you might have hit backspace and then retyped the same thing.
Sure.
So it'll drop it if it's not different. And then the last, the flat map list, or flat map latest, will cancel your HTTP calls, your async calls in flight, and only keep the current one. So if the user types something and your async call takes a while to return, and then they type something again, so now you got 2 requests, it'll drop the first one and only return the last one.
Interesting. And before, you'd have this like ugly mess of like set timeout
just
to see, okay, is anything different? Okay, is anything different? But here, everything's sort of going sort of in a logical way.
Yep.
More of like you would suspect with like a set of things that are happening.
Yep. And then the really interesting piece about this is right now it's an independent library, but it is in one of the stages to become part of the JavaScript spec eventually.
Oh, that's cool. And so the reason why we brought this up, though, was because you said it formed part of Angular 2 somehow.
Yes. So like the HTTP provider, the router provider, some of the third-party libraries that are out there, all return observables now. You can fall back to promises if you want, but everything by default returns an observable.
So now let's talk about how you would work with an observable. So it looks like you have there rx.observable.fromEvent.
Mm-hmm.
That's returning an observable, or what's actually happening, and how do you actually invoke it?
So that first line is saying, basically returning your observable. In this case, it's an input stream from KeyUp. Uh-huh. An input is some jQuery selector.
Mm-hmm.
And that observable, you can either enact methods on top of it in a kind of a functional way, uh-huh. or you can subscribe to it. So in our example here, the last line is subscribing to the data stream. So every time there's new data coming in that goes through all these methods, that anonymous method at the end gets called.
And you could also put some other method in there that it could point to.
Yep, and subscribe takes in three arguments. The first one is any new data. The second one, the second method you would pass in gets fired when it's the last piece of data for that data stream. And the third one is if there's any errors in that data stream.
That's pretty amazing. And I'm looking at this, and I'm looking like at arrow functions, which are not in vanilla JS at this moment. Or are they?
They're not.
And so this is using sort of ES...
Six. Yes.
I have a hard time.
I know. I screwed it up in my talk like three times. So.
So when you're writing these things in ES6,
yep.
what is down converting so that it works in all the browsers?
In my case, we're using Webpack for a lot of what I do.
Oh, I see.
In kind of getting started with Angular 2, Angular 2 pushes System.js.
Of course.
Although Angular really doesn't care. They're just trying to get you started as fast as possible.
Okay. So the first thing to remember in going from Angular 1 to Angular 2 is understand the notion of observables. You'll be much more productive.
Yep. And they're really powerful. They're kind of complicated because there's like 120-plus helper methods. But once you get, you're only going to use like five of them most often, but once you get into them, they're really powerful.
Yeah, well, it seems to be much, just looking at the code, it makes more sense. And once you said, with an observable, once you subscribe to it, then that's when the magic starts. So I like that a lot. All right, so what else do you have for us?
All right, so we're going to do a quick little demo to get started. With Angular 2, they are creating a CLI environment.
Oh. That's what we had a little chat before and saying, hey, what do we want to talk about this time?
Yeah.
And what I told you is I have a hard time starting.
Yes.
Because if you're using Webpack, there's this, there's all these configurations.
Yeah.
If you're using System.js, there's all this other configuration.
Yep.
Which one should I choose? And then if you want to have a starter one that just works, you can look at it. How do you do that? I actually went to the Heroes demo on Angular 2. And I started just literally copying, pasting, and putting all this stuff in. And I think I bemused that it was like 17 files for the Hello World.
Yes. It's quite large. It's quite different than, Angular 1 development or even jQuery development.
And I said to you, is there like a Yeoman generator for that? You're like, no, Seth, there's something easier. And that's what you're going to show
us. There's a CLI. So I'm not going to run everything here just because I don't want to wait for npm to install over a network, but to get started, you would just do npm install -d Angular CLI. You'd run that, and you'll get it installed.
And you already have it installed.
I already have it installed. So we're going to do a new project, and it will be ng new, and then your project name.
And ng would be the npm CLI that you, a command line interface tool that you installed.
Yep. And then if you'd hit enter, it's going to start pulling everything out of... it's going to create everything
for
you.
There's the 17 files that I was talking about, right?
And then it's going to start installing all the NPM packages for you. I've already done that all, so we'll kill that. And what you get looks something like this. It basically creates you a starter application that has everything from end-to-end testing, unit testing, and your initial corner sort of app setup ready to go. So you don't have to do anything. In this case... the file we're on now is
the main one.
The main .ts.
Uh-huh.
And basically that's where Angular 2 bootstraps. And this is where all the magic starts.
an app component. If I'm, let's see if I read the thing, because I read the architecture guy.
Yeah.
So he's going to correct me live, okay? Well, live, that this is recorded. So the app component, because everything is a component in Angular 2.
Everything is a component.
And there's components within components, within components, right?
Yes.
And then in the components, there's the directives.
Yes.
And within the directives, you're using some classes that are like the controllers. So you have the views and the controllers, right?
There is no more controllers.
Okay, so there, this just helped me out.
So everything is either a directive or a component. And most of the stuff you'll make is probably going to be a component.
Okay.
And then it's basically components all the way down. So you kind of have some probably some root ones like login and user information and admin, whatnot, as some common ones.
Uh-huh.
And then those will probably have child components. And then you sort of just combine all those things to make your app. So they're small little chunks of functionality.
So you need to think of like, how can I make this piece of, like you're thinking of like the real estate on your screen, and you're thinking, how can I make this a component, or where should I make these components, and which components should live in each?
Yep.
Okay.
So each little like thing could be one component, or it might just be made up of five, or how many ever make sense.
Okay. An app component here happens to be the root one.
Yes.
Okay.
App component is the start.
Okay.
And then if we jump in the app component. In Angular, we would have like Angular.module or Angular.controller and have to do all this setup stuff.
Uh-huh.
In Angular 2, it's just a class with a decorator.
Okay.
So the app component is what's known as decorator. It's just a bunch of metadata that is attached to that class that any instance of that class can reference.
I got to tell you, this makes me feel so good that there is a way to just do this from the start, right? Because, like I said, when I was doing the Heroes thing, I just copy-paste, made all these files. And here I'm looking at this, and you can see everything sort of just there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, module ID is new. I don't remember what that is exactly, so my apologies. But selector is basically, in Angular 1, you would have your element or your directive. And selector is the same thing, so you would have your element in HTML be, in this case, AppRoot.
Okay.
Template URL is where your template is.
Okay.
Style URL is where your CSS for that component is located. If you
You can have a style for each component.
Yes. And then there's settings for CSS to have it be specifically for that component or the whole application if you want.
Okay.
So you can kind of contain it, sort of like web components are supposed to be all packaged together, or you can have it be more a global style. Excuse me. And then providers are any services that your component wants access to.
I see. And then the dependency injection will put that in there. Okay, so this is where I was getting confused. I said controllers, they don't exist anymore.
Yep.
Now you have components and the set of services that they require.
Yep.
Okay.
And you'll notice here too, the service is not a string.
No.
So all the string-based injection that existed in Angular 1 is gone. It's all type-based injection.
Which is nice. And I see that it's in a square bracket, which means that it can take a list of any of the services you need. Yep. And I see that also in the style sheets as well.
Yes. You can have multiple style sheets. There's one other, there's one other metadata that's not here, and that is directives.
Okay.
So if you have child components that you're referencing on in your template, you would need to tell Angular that they're being referenced.
I see.
There's a directive list also.
So what does that look like? Does that look like...
It's very similar, so if I go back here, it would just be directives. If I can remember how to spell directives.
D-I-R-E.
Yeah, my dyslexia is kicking in. And then some component.
I see, and those are the actual classes of the things. No more funny strings to do that. Okay.
And Angular 2 just figures it out and makes it all work.
That's nice.
And then you can see that, you know, it's TypeScript. We have types. Mm-hmm. So in our constructor, we're passing in app service with a type of app service. Our two methods there have event arguments with mouse event types.
My guess is that the app component, can it implement some interfaces? Is there some lifecycle things that are important for components in Angular?
Yes. So there are a bunch of lifecycle hooks. One of the most popular, probably most common ones, is on init.
Okay.
So that will run, your constructor runs when the component is created, but on init will run once data binding starts.
Okay.
So when you, that's probably the best place to like get your data and set up all your data streams or reactive extensions observables.
Got it.
Is in there. And then, so we have a template URL that references some template. Mm-hmm. To the style guide, those are separated out, although you can have it be string-based if you really wanted
so
to.
So you could put a string where the HTML file is, and that could be your, okay.
Yep.
But don't do that. It feels like I shouldn't do that.
It depends on what you're doing. If you're using Webpack, you can require that in, include the strings. If you're using their System.js, they're loading that stuff dynamically.
Okay.
It's kind of whatever your use case is.
Yeah. So this Angular 2 command line interface creator, is it System.js based or Webpack based?
It's System.js based right now.
Okay.
There's conversations going on of what it really should be, but right now it's System.js.
Okay. Now, in your opinion, which one? I mean, obviously you told me to use Webpack.
Yep.
I'm still a noob at this. Where? Why is one better than the other, or why should you decide to use one or the other? Does it not matter?
I don't have a great answer for that.
Okay. Well, I don't think anybody does. I mean,
I'm using what I'm comfortable with. So we use Webpack just from a simple point of view of in our company, we're using it in our React stack too.
Okay.
So we're kind of keeping that parity.
Got it.
System.js, it works.
Is there like a speed issue with either, or is there anything that I'm like, here's a gotcha that you should be aware of?
The one thing that I would say to be aware of is out of the box is when you're running your application, it's loading all your pieces individually. So it's not bundling your JavaScript and
got it.
At some point it's doing the TypeScript compilation.
Mm-hmm.
Where with like our Webpack stack, and there's ways to do it in System.js, I'm just not sure how. That you can do all that beforehand and then you don't get that performance hit.
So you can do like some gulp thing to push things out. Okay. And Webpack does similar things, right?
Yep.
Because, for example, I'm looking here, and I'm going to see that if I have some complicated application, I'm going to have tons of CSS files, tons of JavaScript, TS files, and then tons of HTML files that somehow need to get bundled together.
Yep. And that's all possible. That's one of the nice things about Angular 2 is, so they have this CLI, and it uses System.js, but you don't have to do it that way.
Okay.
So if you're a fan of Webpack, you can use that. If there's some other thing out there that you want to use, it will probably work. It's the same thing on the testing side. They were a little opinionated with Jasmine to begin with, but in the last release candidate, they sort of stripped some of that out. And now Mocha or Jasmine will work, whatever you want.
So my question to you then, is there a way to go from the CLI-generated starter project and add the Webpack stuff? Is it a trivial thing to do?
Not yet.
Okay.
So if you know Webpack, it's pretty straightforward. But if you're kind of first timer, there's no magic command line interface that will do it for you.
There's got to be someone out there that can write maybe a, you know, just I'm just thinking off the cuff. I mean, if anyone out there knows how to sort of go from the CLI and use Webpack, they should do like some kind of blog post. I mean, I don't know. Do you know anybody?
There are. So there's no easy way to do it, but there are Angular 2 starters out there on GitHub that use Webpack, and you can sort of reference those.
Of course.
So there are people that have done it. We've done it internally in our company. So.
Okay. I was just messing with you.
It's fine. I get it.
So what does this actual application do? Is it just like a hello world kind of thing?
Kinda. So I threw together some code to sort of kind of show off some of the new syntax for the templates, because there was a lot of sort of fear, uncertainty, and doubt about like what's going on between the two.
That's FUD.
Yes. And one of those things that was kind of a major change was the syntax in the templates.
Okay.
It used to be, everything used to be ng dash if, ng dash this, you know, ng dash. If you look at the new syntax in Angular 2, it's a lot different. And on my screen, I created a kind of example of that. We'll just jump over here and take a look at it. It shows and hides stuff. Shows an alert box.
Okay.
If I type, it goes to capital.
Okay.
If I type yellow, it changes yellow.
Oh, that's cool.
Just to kind of demonstrate a lot of the syntax changes. So on line one here, we have this star ngif.
Is this all one component?
Yes, this is all one component.
Perfect.
Just to keep it simple. *ngif*, if is active is true, it'll show it. If it's false, it'll hide it.
And that's a div, yeah.
Yep. So the star symbol represents anything that's modifying the DOM. So *ng4*, it'll be *ng4* if you have a loop. because it signifies that the DOM is going to change when the data that is bound changes.
So the star, I'm trying to see, because there's a star ngif, right?
Yep, right here.
Got it. I see it.
The next thing is we got this square bracket, class.yellow, square bracket.
Uh-huh.
So square brackets signify data binding to an element. So in this case, we're saying if input value equals yellow, then put the class yellow on this element.
Okay.
If it doesn't, remove it.
Okay.
I chose this because it's just a representation that you can bind directly to attributes on an element in Angular 2, where you couldn't really do that unless you did it the Angular 1 way, in Angular 1.
So I'm looking at this syntax here. The square bracket says I'm going to modify something on this element.
Yep.
And the thing you're going to modify is whether class.yellow is active on it.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of what that looks like, because usually I do style equals.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? But that's not what that looks like.
All right. So I'm going to switch to the Angular 2 version.
Okay.
Which I have. So it would look like this in Angular 2. You would have an ng class, and you'd pass it some object. And one of the properties on the object would be, say, yellow.
Uh-huh.
And then you'd have the expression that would put that class onto the element.
So this is new.
So this is the Angular 1 version.
Angular 1 version.
And if I jump back to the HTML, this is the Angular 2 version. This is one of the ways you can do it.
Okay.
There, you can fall back to a class model similar to the one that is in Angular 1. But I wanted to show this because it's a little different. It's something new.
So in essence, what's going to happen is this span is going to, when it's actually rendered,
yep.
is going to have a style.
Yep.
Okay, or class equals.
Yep. So.
Oh, I see what it's doing. Okay, got
it. So if I type in yellow, it turns yellow.
Let's go back to the code and let's see if I can talk through it and you tell me if I'm wrong. So I'm looking at the class.
Yep.
Right? And then that's going to render into an equals. Dot yellow means use the yellow class when that value is true.
Yep. So
otherwise, the class is going to be empty.
Yep. Okay. Put that class on the element if the expression is true. Otherwise, remove it.
Okay. So when I'm looking at the dot expression, is the first part the actual part that attribute that attaches to the element, and the dot is, that's where I'm getting lost.
Yeah. Yep. So the class is the attribute you want to bind to, and then yellow is the style you want to apply.
And then dot, what does the dot do? Is it?
It's just the syntax choice.
And that's a syntax choice of Angular.
Yes.
Okay.
If you look at JSX and React, they have similar type of thing.
All right, let's move to the next thing.
So the next thing with the input value is basically the handlebars templating syntax that exists in Angular 1 today. The pipe or the filter exists in Angular 1 today. They've cleaned that up a little bit. There's less filters available. So there's like uppercase, lowercase, and date. There's a really useful one called JSON that if you're having a problem with your data and you can't figure out what's going on, you can just do like your value pipe JSON, and it'll just spit out the whole object into the DOM so you can see what's there.
Nice.
Which is useful.
And there's a number of functions that are out. It looks like it's forward piping things.
Yep.
Okay.
And then we go to the input. This is where you'll notice that it's a square bracket parenthesis. What that signifies is this syntax is called hot dog in a bun or banana in a box, because I don't know. You ask the Angular team. But what this represents is two-way data binding. So if the value changes in the DOM, it'll update the property in the component. And if the component changes in the, or if the property changes in the component, it'll update the DOM.
But in this case, since you're pushing the text to like a div, it feels like.
Yep.
Then there's only need for one-way binding, or is it needs to be two-way?
This is two-way.
Two-way. Explain why.
Okay. In Angular 2, or in Angular 1, everything was two-way data bound by default.
Okay.
In Angular 1, or in Angular 2, everything is one-way data bound by default now. So the square brackets are to an element. The parentheses are from an element. And because this is taking a value that is user typed in, it's taking that from an element
and
putting
it
to.
It's both ways.
And then you could also change the value dynamically in the component for some reason. in order for the input text to be updated, it needs to also be to that particular input element.
I see. So in this case, if you wanted to change what was in the input box,
yep,
you'd be able to do it with two-way binding. But if it was one-way binding, it would be okay?
Yep.
Okay. That makes sense.
And then the last example is just button clicks. Mm-hmm. Once again, we have just the parentheses, which signifies that we're capturing some event from the element.
Okay.
In this case, we're just showing and hiding stuff. And if we go jump back to the component really quick, it's just calling these two methods that are on this component.
Okay. And then it looks like it's calling the app service.
Yep, okay. So then we have an app service that we're pushing to our component. And this is a really simple service that basically shows an alert box.
Okay.
Normally you wouldn't do this, but just trying to show off some stuff.
I like this because you're doing like simple things, but you're showing how you could sort of break it off.
Yep. So one of the things to notice with services is that this is just a class. There's nothing else here. In Angular 1, there's like three different ways to create a service, all kind of the same, but not really. So there's app or module.service, module.factory, and module.provider.
Mm-hmm.
In Angular 2, they simplified it, removed it all. And now it's just a class.
Okay.
The decorator attached to it, injectable, is just telling Angular that this object can be injected into components or into other services. Other than that, it's just a class.
So the way that they're injected is you have to say, and the at symbol, those are called
decorators.
So when you're building a component in the decorator, you would say, I need these services, right? And we did that before.
Hold on, wrong component.
There it is, right? We need the app service. When a service needs another service, do you put that in the injectable?
So what you would do is you just import some service from live coding.
And then you just put in the constructor and it would know, or do you have to put anything in the injectable?
So this decorator. service would have to have the new sum service would need to have the decorator of injectable to be injected.
Okay. But you don't have to tell it. You have to tell it. Other than that, it just knows, oh, I need one.
Yep. And that's one of the benefits to TypeScript is that they've taken advantage of knowing this to do all their dependency injection. So if they know the type of the argument into your constructor, they can just figure it out.
Okay. This looks good. Makes perfect sense.
Let's see. I mean, that's pretty much the base beginning.
You know, and I like to keep this that you showed us is bite-sized enough to where I feel like I can go and comfortably do something to start. This is awesome. So have you been using this Angular 2 a lot at work?
So we've just started using Angular 2. We have a couple of projects going with it. We've been having a hard time justifying doing new projects in Angular 1 just because this is right around the corner.
Sure.
And after doing some reference apps and kind of playing around with it, realized that it is that much better and decided, you know what, there's a little bit of risk here. Like, example, the router's changed 3 times in the last month and a half. But
that's another episode we need to do some other time.
But it's probably going to be okay.
Okay.
Especially given the time frames that we're developing for.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. This was super educational. Where can people go to find out more about you?
Sure. I'm at Ubert, OOBERT, on Twitter and at GitHub, pretty much everywhere, or geekwithopinions.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. We've been learning all about Angular 2 and how to start moving some stuff over. He showed us, we went through our observables just to get a sense for that. We went into the CLI, the command line interface for Angular 2. We looked at sort of the component way of doing things. We talked about what are those things, the decorators at the
decorators,
top?
Yep.
Talk about decorators. We talked about services and injectables. And then we also looked at some of the ways of doing the binding inside of the views. This has been super helpful, man. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We're here in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin for that conference. We'll see you next time. Take care.